It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
I love you, Solo!
Mama Monster!
Conquered! I'm home!
I want your soul.
You like fighting a woman?
You got grown-ass wrestlers in the back going on Twitter.
Come over here and fight me!
Is that Pat Patterson?
You have legs.
Holy mackerel, did he get fat!
I was 99% positive it was just chest up.
No. Congratulations! Who hasn't beat Daniel Garcia?
Welcome to episode 920 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, July 13th, 2025. I am the Solo Monster, here for a very busy wrestling weekend that isn't over yet, as I am speaking, only a few hours away from WWE Evolution, completing the Atlanta weekend for them. They had two shows in Atlanta yesterday, one of which I'm going to be reviewing here on the show, which I did see late last night, Saturday night's main event, which included the retirement of Bill Goldberg after a 28-year career. Actually turned out to be a very newsworthy show, not just for Goldberg's retirement, but for other unfortunate reasons, which we will get into. And they had the NXT Great American Bash show at Center Stage in Atlanta. I have not seen the entire show. I did see one match. I'll let you know what match that was when I get into that a little bit later. But the big show yesterday, the reason that all of these wrestling fans descended upon the state of Texas, was for AEW All In at Globe Life Field, their biggest event of the year. That is the show that I watched. That is the show that I went live to recap on YouTube last night. Got into all of the different happenings on that show. None bigger than what we had in the main event, which was the crowning of a brand new AEW World Heavyweight Champion. Praise be Hangman Adam Page getting the job done against Jon Moxley, and the Death Riders run, at least with the championship, has come to an end. I mean, the Death Riders have not yet dissolved. I mean, they're still together. For how much longer, I don't know. But we have a brand new champion. I'm going to get into all of the fallout from All In. We'll talk about some of the key happenings on that show. Got some TNA news as well, and then we'll try to get into some questions and get out of here as quickly as we can, because I got to go get ready for Evolution tonight and get everything prepped and set up for the stream. Thank you for joining me and for supporting the show in all the different ways that you do so, including via PayPal, which I know many of you do each and every single week, and I love the hell out of you for it. If you would like to support the show, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. You will see the PayPal link at the top of that page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out, including Big B, Bryant Becerra, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soap, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Portland Pop Star himself, Paul Hamilton, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Night Stalker, Nayef Alsafar, Fast Blast, Tim Banks, Raj Must-See Makwana, Killshot, Keith Hart, Best in the Game, Trey Porter, Grinny the Great, thank you, sir. And Rebel J. Leonard, thank you to you and Gigi. It was great to meet you on Friday night. Had a lot of fun. Hopefully it will not be the final time. I also want to let you guys know about a special rock and wrestling show coming to downtown Sheboygan in Wisconsin. That's this coming Saturday, July 19th. It's being hosted by Freak Toys, a local retro store with all kinds of wrestling collectibles. ACW is promoting the wrestling aspect of the show, which will feature appearances by Swoggle and Danhausen. From Ashes to Embers will be there as well. A great alt-metal band. If you've never heard of them before, go check them out. The event is free and open to the public. They're blocking off the whole downtown area for this. Live music, pro wrestling, food trucks. What's not to like? It runs from 10 in the morning until 8 at night. That's this Saturday, July 19th, in downtown Sheboygan. Rock and wrestling. Now, I was in Texas on Friday. It's been quite the eventful weekend here because House of Glory had its Texas debut on Friday night. And so I traveled with the idea, you know, originally that maybe I would stick around for the entire weekend and we'd hit up Globe Life Field and go to All In, and then more shows started to be added to what ended up being a very congested weekend. And I said, man, if I want to cover as much of this stuff as I possibly can and not have to schlep a whole bunch of crap with me on this trip, it's going to be a hell of a lot easier for me to do a hit and run and get in, do what I need to do, and leave. But I said, man, I'm probably going to end up regretting that decision. And, you know, looking at the show that AEW put on yesterday, I do wish I had stuck around and made more of a weekend out of it, had a big, you know, meetup or something, and then gone to the show. But I got in and we did the show on Friday night, which turned out to be a fun show. But the coolest part about it for me, you know, and I was pulling my best Joey Styles impression, doing the show all by myself. We actually have the women's championship match up right now for free on the House of Glory YouTube channel between Indy Hartwell and Hyon. Hyon being the queen of the indies, very well known, especially on that Texas independent circuit. That match is up right now if you want to go hear me call that match. But outside of that, what was the coolest part for me was just being able to meet so many of you. I can't tell you how many people came up to me during this show just to tell me that they were at the show because they heard me talk about it and promote it on the podcast or on TNT, or that they've been listening since the TV Tracks days, and some even longer than that. Because I haven't been to Texas in a hot minute. I mean, the last time I was there, it was in Dallas in 2016 for WrestleMania. And I enjoyed my stay there, but that was, I mean, my God, what was that, 9 years ago, right? Far too long. So it was just nice to get down there again, as brief as it was. But there were so many listeners of the show who came up to me, who I just took pictures with and got to chat with for a little bit. So to all of you who I know are listening right now, I just want to say thank you again. I appreciate all the love. I appreciate you guys being a fan of this podcast for so long, and hopefully it will not be too long before we make our way down there again. Nothing imminent, but I'm sure at some point we will make our way back down to the Lone Star State. We did make an announcement this week about our next event, which is back in New York City. It's actually the night before SummerSlam, Friday night, August 1st, with the announcement of Ricochet returning to House of Glory. And this is, I want to say this is only the second independent date, I think, that he's worked outside of a Chris Bay benefit show back in March in many, many years. And what has lured him back is this match with the Amazing Red. Now, Ricochet was the very first House of Glory heavyweight champion. He won that title back in 2014, had battles with AJ Styles and Low Key, among others. His last House of Glory match was in 2017, and that was against the Amazing Red for the HOG World title. That was at the Elks Lodge in Queens. So this time it'll be at the NYC Arena in Queens, and we get to run it back one more time. This is Red Ricochet Part 3. They are one win apiece. Something's got to give. That's going to be one of the big matches on that show. Tickets are available at hogwrestling.net. I look forward to seeing you guys there. It's going to be a fun night. It's going to be a very busy weekend. Although I don't know that it could be any busier than this weekend has been. But let's start with AEW, because that was the big show of the weekend. That was AEW All In Texas. I rushed back from Texas to watch this very early in the morning yesterday. A show that lasted nearly 6 hours, not counting the 0 hour, which is actually not an hour. It's more than they should call it. The 0 hours is what they should call it. So really, it was probably something closer to 7 or 8 hours if you want to add everything up. But this is like their WrestleMania. I mean, All In has become their big, I mean, the last few years, their big stadium show. It is their biggest event of the year. And WrestleMania was also 6, 7 hours. I mean, that turned into a bloated mess before they finally separated it into two nights, which is something Tony Khan might potentially consider down the road. I don't know that, you know, he's going to be doing that next year or anything like that. Most of these AEW shows are very long to begin with, but this being their biggest show, I think you kind of go into it understanding and expecting, yeah, that it's going to be a long night. And frankly, that's one of the reasons why I enjoy the earlier start time. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but me personally, not just as a content creator, obviously, but as a fan, I like the afternoon shows. So if this was a regular thing now, if they go back to Wembley next year, it'll be in the afternoon for us on the East Coast anyway because of the time zone difference. But, you know, this show started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday, and I like that. Especially AEW, if they're going to go long for their shows, they're going to put on 4 or 5 hour shows. You know, even if I was going right to bed at the end of the show, I mean, to start watching from 8 and it goes off the air after 12, it's not an ideal thing. The show starts at 3 and it ends around 7 or 8. To me, that's a lot more manageable. But we were 4 hours into the show before we got our first of 3 main events, which was, and I said this last night, and I'll stand by this because I honestly feel that it was the greatest women's wrestling match that AEW has ever produced. That makes 2, by the way, for Toni Storm just in the last 4 months, if you include the Hollywood ending with Mariah May. That was a very different kind of match. That was a very violent match. It was like it was a death match, is basically what it was. This was a straight wrestling match for the world championship. The only gripe that I had with it is I rolled my eyes when Toni Storm hit Mercedes Moné with 3 consecutive Storm Zeros, and then she kicked out. And also because it just, in my mind, it just confirmed, like, okay, if she kicked out of 3 consecutive Storm Zeros, she's winning this match. Like, how could she not win the match at this point? But then came the Avalanche Storm Zero off the ropes, and that won it. And Toni Storm is still the AEW Women's World Champion. Mercedes Moné suffers her first loss in an AEW ring. Still the TBS champion, because that title was not on the line. And come October, if she happens to still be the TBS champion, she will become the longest reigning TBS champion of all time. I don't know if that's what Tony Khan has in mind or not, but that title is still in her possession, as are all of her championships. She didn't lose anything last night. She just lost the opportunity to add a 7th belt to her collection. It was the right outcome. I did the predictions right here on this very show last week, and I picked Toni Storm to win. Some of you mocked me, and some of you laughed at me and said, there's no way Mercedes is losing. She won the Owen. She has all these other titles. Everything has been building to this moment. And then Tony Khan went and did the right thing and had Toni Storm go over. Now, the right thing, frankly, would have been to probably get that TBS title away from her in the first place, but he was going for the biggest possible women's match that he could put together. And in his mind, champion against champion sounded a lot better than if you just did a regular championship match, even though it wasn't title for title. Mercedes had been unbeaten. Nobody's been able to beat Mercedes. And so finally, the best women, or best woman, in the division, that being Toni Storm, because she's the champ, was the one who finally handed her her first defeat. And now the question is, coming out of this, you know, what direction do they take with Mercedes? Is she going to start to lose more often? Is this going to be a blip on the radar? And, you know, she has a complete attitude change and becomes, you know, almost like a darker version of herself, and she goes crazy and attacks Toni Storm. Are they going to continue this? They're going to rematch the two of them at their next show? Or was this a one and done situation? Because she's going to be the champion at some point. It's just a matter of when. I don't think it's going to happen until she is no longer the TBS champion. So I don't see this as, oh, well, they're just going to rematch them at Forbidden Door. I don't think that's the case. There was one outcome that we should have gotten in this match, and it was the outcome that he gave us. And this actually was a common theme with the main events, with the key matches on the show last night, is that in most cases, we got the right outcome. Could have gone a very different way. These two went out there, the outside of some blood that was coming from Toni Storm's nose. I mean, there was nothing violent about it. It wasn't a bloodbath. There were no weapons, you know, tables and all kinds of plunder and garbage and stuff. Like I said, it was a straight up professional wrestling match. I thought it was an excellent match between these two in a string of excellent matches that Mercedes has had and Toni Storm has had. Toni Storm's coming off that great storyline with Mariah May. They had the perfect ending to that feud back in March at Revolution. And I didn't know if she was going to be able to top that this year. But I think they managed to pull it off. So the first of 3 main events was a home run as far as I'm concerned. And that led into the second main event, which was Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada. It was Omega Okada Part 5. This was to unify the international and continental titles into one singular unified championship, for which they created a brand new physical belt. Even though Tony Khan earlier in the week suggested that the winner may well walk around with all 3 titles, which I feel like would kind of negate the need to even have a new belt. I don't even know that they have necessarily figured out all the little minute details of how this is going to work. But this match right here is a match that we have not gotten in many years. Although we've seen it four times previously, it's been a while since we've seen Omega and Okada one-on-one. Jim Ross was brought back to do commentary for this match and the main event. But he's called his fair share of Omega and Okada matches just individually because he did commentary for a number of years for Access TV for New Japan. So he at least had that familiarity with both these guys, including Okada. We have not heard from Jim Ross in many months. Jim Ross underwent treatment, surgery for colon cancer, and recently said that he was deemed cancer-free, which is great news. But he's been through the ringer. You know, he's a 70-year-old man who has had numerous health issues in his life. He was even able to and this is one of the reasons why I thought it was actually nice to have him on commentary for this match, because one of the recurring themes of this match was Okada focusing on the ribs, on the midsection, and they talked about the diverticulitis, right? That's going to be the running story for every Kenny Omega match until the day he retires. You can rest assured that Excalibur will mention the fact that this man suffered from diverticulitis and almost died. Well, Jim Ross also suffered from diverticulitis and could have died. And had quite a bit of his, his intestine or colon, whatever it was, removed. That was when Vince McMahon gave us that oh-so-classy segment on TV with Dr. Heine that I'm sure we all remember. But because he had gone through something similar, he was able to add, I felt, a certain perspective to this match that the other announcers couldn't. So I thought it was smart to have him out there for that match. I thought that, you know, JR did fine on the whole. It felt like he got a little more energetic the longer things went, like by the time they got to the main event. Not a very enthusiastic call at the very end of the main event when Hangman won the championship. But again, this man's been through a lot of shit. I know he really wanted to be on this show, and I was happy to hear him on the call for this. As far as the match itself with Omega and Okada, the way that I described it last night was, it was the weakest of all the matches that they have had. And even the weakest Kenny Omega, Kazuchika Okada match is still a pretty kick-ass match. And that's what this was. A very good match. There was some interference from members of the Callis family. Rocky Romero came out. Trent Barretta came out. Don Callis kept getting involved. It didn't really factor into the direct finish. Although, you know, they did it in such a way where if they wanted to circle back around to this, there's certainly, I think, good reason for them to do so. But at the end of the day, you know, what we got from these two was a very good match that started predictably. Because if you've ever seen an Okada match, or even the past matches that Okada and Omega have had, it starts out very slow, very methodical, and then it builds. It builds to a crescendo, especially in those last 2 or 3 minutes. You go back and watch all the classic Okada matches from New Japan, and there's a certain formula to it. And it works for him. And there have been times where it doesn't work, and there are some matches he's had that are not so exciting. But those big epic matches, because they always went so long, those matches would always go 45 minutes, 60 minutes in some cases. You don't want to blow your load in the opening minutes. I mean, you want to take it easy and then build, and that's what they did here. But they had a very good match, and Okada wins. He wins with the Rainmaker. He is now the first ever AEW Unified Champion. And what I like about Okada winning this match is that we have already gotten the tease on television, so you know it's coming at some point, of potential conflict within the Callis family between Okada and Konosuke Takeshita. Takeshita is not fond of Okada now being part of the family and having Don Callis with him. They had a little face-to-face in the back a couple weeks ago. I don't know if the idea is to just go into that straight away, or if that's something that, you know, Tony is sort of in his mind building towards one of the bigger shows later in the year, like an All Out or a Full Gear. Doesn't have to happen at Forbidden Door. Probably shouldn't, to be honest with you. Probably should build it up for a couple months. But it's coming. And the hope, my hope, is that when it happens, it's used as a springboard for Takeshita to get a huge win over Okada, because even Kenny Omega couldn't beat Okada at their big show of the year. Okada wins again, as he has most of his matches here in AEW. So if they save the win for Takeshita, it'll mean so much more, because he's somebody who they should be building for a top spot like that. And I feel like he's mostly there. He's not there yet, but he's mostly there. He just lost to Bandido. They had an incredible match, apparently, in the main event of the Ring of Honor show on Friday night. So it's not like he's sort of in that rarefied air with names like Omega and Okada yet, but he could get there. And so I think a match, a feud with Okada and a win will do a lot for him. So I hope that's the direction. But again, Omega, Okada, I got out of it what I was hoping to get, but I could sit here and say that it wasn't as good or quite as epic as the past matches that they've had together. And then we had the main event. I know they said it was three main events on this show, but at the end of the day, this show was built around the main event, which was for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship, which we have physically not laid eyes on since October. That was the last time we actually saw the belt. It was Jon Moxley defending the title in a Texas death match against Hangman Adam Page. Not the first time these two have had a Texas death match before. Hangman won the last one. That was at Revolution 2 years ago. Everything coming into this show was set up for a big win for the babyfaces, which is basically everybody other than the Death Riders, right? Everyone who has been abused and attacked by or fucked over in some way by the Death Riders over the last 9 months. Everything was built and designed for this to be that epic conclusion where finally the good guy gets the win. The cowboy rides into Texas as the challenger. He rides out of Texas as the champion. And I said coming into this, anything else would be an epic failure on Tony Khan's part. If he wanted to squeeze this just a little bit more, or, you know, I promised Darby that I would give him, well, whatever. I mean, whatever you believe to be the case, that maybe he was going to wait and put the title on Darby Allin in a few months. Anything other than Hangman winning here would have been a fail. And what we got was what I expected, which was an overbooked main event. Maybe not quite as overbooked as I thought it could be, but it was overbooked. There were a lot of people getting involved. But you knew when they added the Texas deathmatch stipulation that that was going to be the case. The other thing that you also had to realize, unless you're a complete moron, is that when they announced this stipulation, that this was going to be violent and bloody, and Jon Moxley wasn't going to have it any other way. We've seen him and Hangman go in there in Texas deathmatches and other kinds of hardcore matches against various people and bleed buckets and do a lot of crazy shit, some of which even I thought was completely unnecessary. We saw some of that in the wars that Hangman and Swerve had. So when they announced this, it's like, okay, I know coming into this what to expect here. This is going to be a bloodbath. There's going to be all kinds of weapons being used, skin being torn. And they didn't disappoint in that regard. We had everything from forks to chairs and tables and chains and a bed of nails. A bed of nails happened to be laying underneath the ring. You never know what you might find underneath that ring. Maybe one day they'll pull out a bomb. They'll blow each other up like they do in some of those Japanese death matches. Although I guess it didn't work out too well that one time with, was it Omega? Who is it? Omega and Moxley, I think, right? Back at Daly's place? Eddie Kingston got involved? So that's what this match was. There was blood being spilled literally in the opening 2 minutes of this match. That was from Jon Moxley, who was jabbed repeatedly in the head with a fork. And then Hangman got opened up with some barbed wire. Marina Shafir was out there. She was getting involved left and right. And she got taken out at one point with a Death Valley driver off the apron through a table, even though she would reemerge a little while later. But then people started to get involved. Now, Samoa Joe, I should point out, was taken out earlier in the show. The Ops got a win over the Death Riders and retained the Trios titles. And when that match was over, Samoa Joe got taken out in an injury angle, had a chair wrapped around his neck. Claudio stomped on it. And that was the last we saw of him or any member of the Ops for the rest of the show. And the reason they did that was to illustrate that Hangman had a few less allies to rely upon come time for that main event. I feel like if Joe was, you know, if it was done as an injury angle to write him off TV for any length of time, then they would have lost the titles here. They wouldn't have retained the Trios titles. So we didn't see the Ops here. But the Death Riders, of course, got involved. Claudio and Yuta and Gabe Kidd and Marina Shafir, they're all getting involved. Will Ospreay comes out. He tries to help. He gets the same treatment that Samoa Joe got. He got a chair wrapped around his neck. Claudio stomped on it. Rest in peace, Mr. Ospreay. Would we see Darby Allin? Of course, you had to know the answer was yes. The only question is, where on the card would he appear? I didn't think he was going to be in the gauntlet match because, to me, you're taking away what the big moment is if you do that. You're spoiling the surprise, even though I know it wasn't much of a surprise to see him here. But you got to save that for the main event. And they did. He popped up on the big screen. He filmed a video when he was on Mount Everest. And he delivered a message to Jon Moxley. And then as it turned out, he was there. He rappelled from the ceiling. Sting was there too. He wasn't on TV, but apparently Sting was there with his sons at the show. You know, he was at WrestleCon. He is in Texas. He lives in Texas. So I expected him to at least be there visiting if he didn't pop up on TV. But his son, Darby, was there, and he rappelled from the ceiling. Bryan Danielson is another name that has been fucked over by these people. That's how this whole thing got started. Jon Moxley won the championship from Bryan Danielson. He got excommunicated from the Death Rider. Well, I guess they weren't called that at the time. What were they? The Blackpool Combat Club. Put a plastic bag over the guy's head. We hadn't seen him since. Bryan Danielson shows up dressed in a lucha mask out of the crowd. Apparently he was sitting there, I think possibly for the entire show, people were saying. Like, he was sitting there in that mask the whole night. Then he gets into the ring and he mows down Yuta with the Busaiku knee. He's doing the yes chant. This is days after claiming the WWE had reached out to him recently. I don't know if they sent him a formal legal letter, like a cease and desist, but basically saying, you got to stop doing that yes stuff. So what's the first thing he does when he gets in the ring at his first appearance back on TV? He puts his fingers in the air, and he's got 25,000 plus people doing the yes chant. I love it. So he got involved, and he got a measure of revenge on them. And, you know, Darby really wasn't as much of a factor here as I thought maybe he would be. But I'm kind of glad he wasn't. And I'll tell you why, because it put more of a spotlight on the one person who is forever linked to Hangman Page. And it's not Darby Allin. It's Swerve Strickland. He was the one who got that last bit of shine when he showed up, when he hit the scene. We saw Swerve Strickland, and he had that chain. Now, if you saw the segment, and I know some of you probably didn't, but there was a segment that they aired on Collision on Thursday night where Swerve and Hangman, they had a little meeting of the minds backstage. And they sat down, and it was basically Hangman explaining to him, like, my son still has nightmares about you breaking into our house. You got what you deserved. But then he asked him, like, do you regret doing what you did? And again, he's very emotional as he's saying this, like, but not like in an over-the-top kind of eye-rolling way. And then Swerve says, you know, if you would have asked me that question a little while back, I would have said no. Yeah, but then he goes on and talks about, again, all the shit that these two have been through. Talks about Hangman burning his house down. And, you know, I was planning on raising my kids there, my grandkids there. That's the home that I was raised in. But he's come to this realization that you got to leave the past in the past. And he says, yeah, you know what? I do have regrets over what I've done. And Hangman says, you know, my family, I'm bringing my family, because I'm not bringing them to the show, but they're going to be in town. They're going to be in Texas for the show. And Swerve says, I'll steer clear of them. And just the back and forth between them, it was very well done. It was great storytelling from these two. But there was a chain that was there. I think maybe Hangman had the chain, but he left it behind. And it's like the last scene that you see is Swerve picking the chain up and staring at it. And it was foreshadowing. It was foreshadowing for what we got here when he came out, because the Young Bucks also came out. And he wipes them out with the chain, and then they lock eyes. And you don't know, what is this guy going to do? Is he going to fuck over Hangman Page and make sure that he never wins the AEW? That's what Hangman said to him. All right, I will not rest. So long as you are trying to win that championship, I will not allow that to happen. Because he was obsessed with making sure that Swerve would never be champion. So what is Swerve going to do here? He throws the chain into the ring. It's like a little nod to the Hangman. And that chain is what factored into the finish of this match when he wrapped it around Moxley's neck and he hung him over the top rope. And credit to John Moxley, he did a great job of selling that spot because he's got this fucking chain choking him out, wrapped around his throat. He can't breathe. He's got nowhere to go. And so he's panicking and he's flailing around. And then finally, he just starts tapping on his own shoulder. And the place comes unglued. We got a submission from John Moxley, and that is how Hangman Page wins the championship. So as opposed to it being directly as a result of, you know, Darby Allin doing something, it was that moment with Hangman and Swerve. And that really is, you know, the story here, because it goes back 2 years, you know, between these two guys. Anyone who tells you that AEW doesn't tell stories, just show them that. Show them that segment from Thursday. Show them all of the segments in recent months involving Hangman and Swerve. So Hangman wins the title. He unlocks the briefcase. He pulls out the championship. First time we've seen it since October. It still had the Bryan Danielson side plates on it, which was a nice touch because that was, I mean, legitimately the last time that we saw the title on TV. Danielson was the champion and Moxley beat him for the belt. And we got the happy ending to close the night. Hangman very emotional, holding up the championship, all the fans celebrating and rejoicing. Not only that he won, but because the reign of terror has finally come to an end. You may look at this and say, well, you see, it was all worth it in the end. And it was a great payoff. It really was. But again, my issue with the Death Rider stuff is that I just never found it particularly interesting. You know, it's one of the issues I had with the Aces and Eights in TNA many years ago. There was nothing interesting about it. There was nothing fun about it. There was nothing really that I can recall fun about trying to watch, you know, the baby faces overcome the faction, because I mean, that group was, I just thought it was a terrible group. And the Death Riders really weren't that much better. But look at some of the matches and the match endings that we've gotten on these pay-per-views in recent months. And I understand that it was going to leave people with a sour taste in their mouth when Moxley won because they wanted him to lose. But just the way that things played out, it was just very underwhelming. And I was like, man, this run is really dragging the rest of this show down because there's nothing compelling to me about any of this. Maybe you think it was compelling. Compelling is not a word I would use to describe any of the Death Rider shit that we were getting on television on most weeks. I was ready for this thing to end, you know, 3-4 months ago, even when Swerve challenged for the title of Dynasty. And that was more just a case of, okay, Swerve's the one that they're putting up against Moxley. Great. Let's put the belt on Swerve, right? Anybody but Moxley and the Death Riders. And they dragged it out and they milked it to get to this point, to get to this moment. So at least in the end, it was worth it, but it doesn't make a lot of the shit that we had to sit through leading up to it any better, even looking back in hindsight. Like, okay, you know what? This was all worth it in the end. Great payoff. I'll never sit here and tell you that all those months of the Death Riders necessarily makes it all worth it. Had they done this even a couple months ago at a different show, even if it was a smaller venue, I would have been very happy. We could have gotten Hangman, you know, defending against somebody else on this show. But you know what? The payoff was great. The finish of the show was excellent. The match itself was brutal. And I thought that it played out exactly the way that it needed to play out. I really don't have any complaints about what they did here. And now at least we have a new champion. It feels like this new chapter is going to begin on Wednesday. I don't know who that first challenger is going to be for Hangman, because I just don't see them going right back to Moxley. I guess they could rematch them. They don't really do that very often in AEW. It's not like you have automatic rematches. Like, it doesn't work that way. I don't think that's how Tony's brain works. So I don't know who it's going to be, but I'm just happy that we can move beyond this shit and just move in a different direction now. The other match we had was Swerve and Ospreay. That was the other big match with big implications as far as what would happen if Swerve and Ospreay did not beat the Young Bucks. Because if the Young Bucks lost, then they would lose their EVP status. No more EVP titles for them in this company. But if they won, Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay would not be able to challenge for the AEW World Championship for an entire year. That's two of the biggest babyfaces outside of Hangman, really. If you want to throw Darby in there, I guess, in the entire company. And you are handcuffing yourself by saying, okay, These guys can't even challenge for that title for an entire 12 months. So there were some stakes on the line in this match. Swerve and Ospreay got the win, though, so the Bucks are no longer EVPs in storyline. And thank God for that, because the whole EVP abusing their power, founding fathers, I mean, it's all played out bullshit that we have seen so many times before, not only with them, but in other companies as well. This has gone on long enough. It'll be nice now when they show up to TV this week, if you have, you know, the guys in the locker room are looking at them a little bit differently when they walk into the venue. And maybe they're not even allowed in the locker room because they don't have their own special locker room anymore, right? That's the kind of thing I want to see when they show up. Show the real implications of them losing that match when they show up on Dynamite this week. But Swerve and Ospreay and the Bucks, man, they went out there, they had an excellent tag team match. It was what you would expect from a young Bucks match. There was a lot of rapid-fire offense, big spots. There was a lot of no-selling going on here because it was basically boom, boom, boom. That's what we get in these types of matches. It's like the party match. But it got over big in front of those fans, and it really picked up well in those final few minutes. So that was an excellent match. We had the tag team championships on the line with the Hurt Syndicate defending against not only Jet Speed, and what a job they did with Jet Speed in the weeks leading up to this show, trying to build them up as credible challengers. And then the late addition this week of Christian Cage and Nick Wayne, the Patriarchy, to make this a triple threat match. And this was not an excellent tag team match in the way that that previous one was. But it served a purpose. I mean, it had its moments. It really wasn't anything great. It really was more about what happened when the match was over. FTR was present at ringside, though, doing commentary. Now, they were on the Zero Hour. They had a match with the Outrunners. They beat the Outrunners. It wasn't as good as the match they had on Collision a couple of weeks ago. So they wrestled. But the reason they wrestled on the pre-show is because they had other storyline things in mind for them on the main card. So they sat in on commentary. And what they did was they had Bobby Lashley pin Christian. So the Hurt Syndicate, really to the surprise of no one, still tag team champions. At no point did I honestly believe that they were losing the titles or that Jet Speed was going to win the titles. So to me, that's a failure as far as, you know, building them up as credible challengers. As one fan, I was not convinced. You did not convince me that these men had a realistic shot of beating Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin. I know they tried in the last week, but in all the other weeks that led up to this, they would show up, they would get their asses kicked, and they'd get put down. And they're very scrappy, so they would fight back, but then they would get put down again, even in this match. I mean, the Hurt Syndicate was having their way with these guys for a good portion of the match, but Christian is the one who takes the losing fall. And because of that, when the match is over, the Patriarchy turns on Christian. Nick Wayne attacks Christian. Mother Wayne smacks Christian right across the face, and Nick Wayne is teasing a concerto. FTR's in the ring, right? They literally hand him the chair. They're going to let him do it. And then we get the return of Adam Copeland, who we have not seen since, was it Dynasty? It had to be Dynasty, when FTR tried to murder him. Copeland comes out, not before going to either side of the stage to pose. He's all amped up, right, listening to his music. Then he goes to the ramp and he poses again. And they even give him a pyro celebration. I'm surprised by the time he got to the ring, Christian's head didn't look like that episode of The Walking Dead when Negan took the barbed wire bat to, I won't spoil who it was, but he took that barbed wire bat to a couple of heads. You remember what those heads look like? That's what Christian's head could have looked like. I mean, it took so long for Copeland to come down here to make the save. But he had his board with the nails in it, Spike. He's fighting people off and spears FTR. And we get him and Christian all alone in the ring. What's going to happen here? He goes over to Christian and tells Christian, go find yourself. Which is very different than what he told Christian before. Actually, Christian told him first. Then he told Christian. But he tells him, go find yourself. And then he leaves, and Christian is left to ponder what's next for his future. I know what's next for his future. We're getting that Edge and Christian reunion. Tony Khan has been just salivating over for so long. I mean, he wanted to put the tag team titles on the Hardys, I'm sure, and that didn't happen for obvious reasons. He would have loved to have had the Hardys as part of the lineage of those tag team titles. So you couldn't get that, but he's going to get his Edge and Christian reunion. And we have a pay-per-view coming up in just a couple of months that happens to be in Toronto, Canada. It's called All Out, which is usually another big show for them. What better place to have a Cope and Christian reunion than at All Out against FTR? Will FTR be the tag team champions at that point? Because now there's been an established issue after what happened last night where FTR is firmly entrenched now in this tag title picture. Are they the ones to hand the Hurt Syndicate their first loss and take the titles from them before we get to September? So that way, when we get the inevitable tag team match, it's not just a reunion, it's a reunion and the titles are on the line. Because Tony Khan is not going to be able to book a bigger tag team match on that show than Cope and Christian against FTR. So if you look at it from that perspective, why wouldn't you want the titles to be on the line in that match? Otherwise, what competition is there for the Hurt Syndicate? Like, who else would they even step into the ring with on that show? What match could they possibly do that would have any kind of interest, you know, that would be comparable to what you'll have in that FTR match? So I think it should be for the tag team titles. I think that FTR should win those titles between now and then. And you go into All Out and make that for the championship. But now you got 2 months to play this story out on TV. How do we get there? I know Christian just lost his entire family. So he's going to be a little more vulnerable now. He might be a little more open to getting back in the good graces of Adam Copeland. But we still have to get there first. You can't just have him show up and go, okay, and just shake hands and hug, because that's fucking boring. You know, you got weekly television here. You got to tell that story the right way. Now, from Adam Copeland, we go to a different Adam. We go to Adam Cole. And this was the low point of the show in that it brought the mood down because it was just a very sad situation. So Adam Cole was scheduled to defend the TNT Championship against Kyle Fletcher. Not a doubt in my mind, that title was changing hands. It was time. It was time for Kyle Fletcher to win that title and get a run. And we find out hours before the show yesterday, as Tony Khan has said, when he went to bed on Friday night, Adam Cole was wrestling Kyle Fletcher. And then it was earlier in the day on Saturday that he had a conversation with Cole, and the decision was made that he would not be wrestling. And in fact, he would be vacating the TNT Championship. And the title would be decided in a fatal four-way match. Because Adam Cole was injured. And he didn't shed any light on what the nature of the injury was. He didn't offer any specifics. But he just said that he wants Adam Cole to take time off to get himself healed up. And the first thought that I had was concussion. Because Adam Cole had a very bad concussion, at least one that I know of. He may have had more, but there was that one really bad concussion that he had in, 3 years ago. When he got hurt in that four-way match of Forbidden Door. And they had to go to the very awkward finish, right? It was Okada and Jay White and Adam Cole, and I don't remember who the fourth man was. And he was out for about 9 months. And he has talked about how bad that concussion was. I mean, he couldn't really look at any bright lights. He was having these headaches. He was together with Britt Baker at that time, and she's spoken about, you know, what they went through during that period of time. Bad enough that he thought his career could be over. He wasn't even sure he'd be able to come back from that. But he did. And then he got hurt, arguably even worse, with that ankle injury, which was just gruesome. And he had 2 surgeries on it, and he missed over a year. So it's been one thing after another with this guy. But he wrestled on Collision on Thursday and looked fine. And that was 48 hours before the pay-per-view. So I'm like, if he's injured, and it's not like he just got a phone call that he's got some horrible disease that, you know, he's got a retire from, what else could it possibly be? Concussion. That was my first thought. And now we find out, just a few hours ago, this was posted from Fightful. Fightful and Brian Alvarez, I think, are both saying the same thing. But I saw it first from Fightful, that the injury is in fact a concussion. And I know Brian Alvarez said that Cole suffered the injury. It was on a lariat that Kyle Fletcher delivered. Well, the belief is that it happened on a lariat. So I went back because they have the matchup on their YouTube channel. And I found the spot. It's about 6 minutes or so into the video. And Fletcher, he winds up and he blasts him pretty good with a lariat. Didn't really hit him like across the chest. He kind of got him in the side of the jaw. But, you know, it didn't look any different than any other wicked lariat that somebody would throw in a wrestling match. And Cole did finish the match, which they were near the end anyway, but there was a post-match angle where Fletcher tried to attack him from behind and Cole, you know, caught him and like everything looked normal. Evidently, it may have happened on that spot. And it just makes that spot from their last match. They had that match after Double or Nothing on Dynamite where Fletcher gave him that apron powerbomb on the outside where he basically clipped the apron, but did so with his head. It was a brutal spot. Like, it made me angry watching that. And it was just so stupid and unnecessary to do with a guy with a history of concussions and a bad one that he suffered that kept him out of action, right? He was unable to work for 9 months. Why would you even attempt a spot like that, right? And that's on both those guys. So I'm sure they talked that shit over beforehand. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. Okay, cool. For all we know, it could have been Cole's idea. Who knows? It was a very stupid thing to do. And there's blame to go around on both sides there. And that's not even where he got hurt. This was on a completely different spot weeks later. But I thought back when I read that, okay, it is a concussion. I just thought back to that match and said, boy, that makes that spot look even dumber than it was. And it was pretty fucking dumb when it happened. But boy, does that look even dumber now. That you would take a guy with that kind of history and even put him in a situation like that. It's just unnecessary. So he comes out to the ring and he's got the TNT championship. And you can tell he's very somber. He's very sad. Of course he is. You could tell he's been crying. He was expecting to come out here and wrestle on the biggest show of the year in front of, you know, over 25,000 people. And by the way, the belief is that there were in excess of 27,000. That's what Mike Johnson said on PW Insider. So they had a good number of people there in that stadium. And instead, he's dressed in his street clothes standing in the ring and he has to forfeit this championship instead of losing it to someone. And he is all but saying, look, I don't know if this is my retirement speech, but if it is... And then he's just thanking the fans and telling the fans he loves them and this is all he's ever wanted to do. And it was a very emotional thing and he was getting very emotional. And then Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly appeared in the ring and they all embraced and they were clearly crying. So this was a very real, very raw, very unfortunate situation here. And I felt bad for Adam Cole because Adam Cole is just the nicest guy, right? Not a bad word said about him. And is so well respected by his colleagues and people that have worked with him. I mean, even on social media, I saw there was a post from Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa and multiple other people, you know, coming out of the show, whether they work for AEW or not, talking about Cole, you know, and what he meant to them, what he meant to their career. He has had some incredible matches in his career, and a lot of them, I think, back to those days, the NXT Black and Gold, and when he was the champion on that brand, and the battles with people like Johnny Gargano, and Aleister Black, and Ricochet, and on and on and on. And that guy's future, man, it looked like he was on a rocket headed for really big things. And it didn't work out for various reasons. In WWE, he never got there. Right, the peak for him was probably that one episode of SmackDown when everybody was still stuck in Saudi Arabia and they had to do an NXT invasion. And in the main event of the show that night on SmackDown, you've got Adam Cole pinning Bryan Danielson. Right, that was probably like in that company, that was the peak for him. And you're like, oh, this is a sign of things to come. And boy, it didn't work out that way, did it? So he ended up in AEW and he had that, what ended up being for a while, this great program, this great story partnership with MJF, which was marred by injury. They both got hurt. But that injury that Adam Cole sustained, it really fucked everything up. Not a doubt in my mind that the idea was that Adam Cole would be the one to win the championship, and MJF would have to probably chase after him to try to get it back, but Cole was going to get that title. There is not a doubt in my mind about that. He would have been the AEW World Champion. That was the trajectory that he was on. And the injury just, it just threw a monkey wrench into everything. It is just, it has not been the same for him since. I'm glad he was able to come back. What they have had him doing, he's been the Collision Cowboy now for many, many months, pretty much relegated to that show. He's had the TNT title. It has never felt less important than it is right now. Not all his fault, but that's just the way that it is. I'm sorry, but that's the way that it's been now for a while. And to see him out there talking about the possibility that he may never be able to wrestle again was really shitty. I think he will. I personally don't believe for a second that we have seen the last of Adam Cole in the ring. But just the fact that he was talking like that tells you that he thinks it's serious. The fact that he went to Tony Khan on Saturday morning, I assume it was Saturday morning, and told him, look, I'm not feeling well. He could have kept his mouth shut. He didn't have to say anything. There's a lot of wrestlers back in the day, even today, let alone back in the day, that would not have said a fucking word. I got to go to work. Got a big match coming up. I just got to get through it. I'll be okay. I think it's a great thing that he went to Tony Khan and was able to be that open and honest and tell him, yeah, you know what? I'm not feeling too well. And be like, you know what? I don't think I should be wrestling. Because there's a lot of wrestlers that would never think to do that. So I'm glad that he did. But I feel really bad that he's, you know, in this position in the first place. It sucks. And I hope that it's not too serious of a concussion. But for him to be that emotional tells me that he is at least contemplating the fact that maybe it wouldn't be in his best interest to continue to be in the ring. I hope he's able to make it back, but whatever decision he makes, you got to look out for your health first, especially when it comes to concussions and the brain. You don't want to be messing around with that. There's a reason why Corey Graves is doing commentary now and not wrestling. He had concussion issues that ended his career prematurely, and he went on to do other things. There's other things that Adam Cole could be doing if he's not in the ring wrestling. I just hope he makes the best decision for his health. So instead, we got Kyle Fletcher, Dustin Rhodes, Sammy Guevara, and Daniel Garcia in a four-way. And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell is Dustin Rhodes and Sammy Guevara doing in this match? Why not just run back Kyle Fletcher and Daniel Garcia? I know he beat Garcia on TV already. What the hell do these other two have to do with the TNT title? Plus, they had already wrestled on the pre-show. And then it became very clear when the match was over why they wanted Dustin and Sammy in this match, because they called an audible and they decided plan B is going to be giving people the feel-good moment by having Dustin Rhodes in Texas, in his home state, go over and win his first AEW championship. He is currently, I think he's got two titles right now in Ring of Honor. I think he's the six-man champion, isn't he? And then he's the tag team champion. So now he's about to go on his own Mercedes Moné run here. He's going to keep racking up titles. He is now the TNT champion, and he was very emotional. And the fans pop for the finish, not so much for the match itself. The match itself was very dull, but it was a nice feel-good surprise moment for him, for the fans. The fans were seemingly very happy for him, and it's fine. The fact that they didn't put the title on Fletcher, who was absolutely going to win that championship last night, he didn't win it. It's fine. He's going to win it soon enough. Dustin Rhodes is not going to be TNT champion for very long, and Kyle Fletcher will be the next TNT champion. They'll just have to wait a little bit longer, people wanting to see it. You may not have to wait that long. It could happen as early as television this week. It would not shock me if they did something on Dynamite. But he will be the TNT champion. This was something that just came out of left field that they didn't plan for. And so Tony Khan is like, well, this was a really shitty kind of Debbie Downer moment with Adam Cole. Let's lift people back up. Instead of just having the heel go over here, let's have Dustin Rhodes get a moment here in Texas. And we respect Dustin, and he does a lot of work behind the scenes for them. He just signed, by the way, a new 6-year deal that will keep him with the company through the year 2030. So Tony Khan knows that he has a lifer in Dustin Rhodes, and this was his way of rewarding him. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Whether you work crazy hours at the office, or maybe you work with people you don't like, maybe you don't even work at an office, right? You do manual labor of some kind that's physically taxing, whatever it may be. You may be dealing with a lot of stress. Workplace stress is now one of the top causes of declining mental health, with a whopping 61% of the global workforce experiencing higher than normal levels of stress. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't have the freedom to just wave goodbye to the stress to go do something else, but you can start to focus more on your wellness. When I get stressed, I may go for a long walk, I may hit the gym, pick up my little retro gaming console and play for 20 minutes, but these things aren't a long-term solution to regular stress. Therapy can help you navigate whatever challenges the workday might bring. Therapy offers lots of benefits for your mental health, from coping skills to stress management, teaching you the skills to strengthen your relationships and remove barriers to forming new ones. It can also help you cope with and overcome issues stemming from past trauma of some kind, no matter how big or small. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 5 million people across the globe. And many of those people can attest to how much it's worked for them, which is why BetterHelp has an App Store rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client reviews. It's also convenient, allowing you to join a session with a therapist at the click of a button, and you can switch therapists at any time. BetterHelp makes it all very simple. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise. Unwind from work with BetterHelp. Sound Off listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. MJF and Athena came out of All In as the winners of their respective casino gauntlet matches. The men's gauntlet went 35 minutes. On a show this long, for that gauntlet match to go 35 minutes was completely unnecessary. It was the weakest of all the men's gauntlets they've done so far. And even still, it was fine. It just wasn't as good as the other ones that they've done. And the biggest surprises were Juice Robinson and the Guns making their return. So it's good to have them back, but I mean, that was the biggest surprise of the entire match. MJF was the predictable winner. I think it was the right move to make. There's more storyline potential there, I think, with him running around with that guaranteed world title contract now as a member of the Hurt Syndicate. And then on the women's side, Athena wins. I was very happy to see that. I did not think that was going to happen. They kind of beat it out of me where it's like, you know what? I can't explain why she has been kept away for so long from AEW television and what Tony's vision at this point. I figure the reason why she was really kept largely exclusive to Ring of Honor was because they really wanted her to be one of the centerpieces of that television show when and if it got picked up by either a streamer or a network. And that never happened. It just never happened. And at this point, it's sort of the law of diminishing returns here. It's like, well, what more can you do with her? She's already on her way to becoming 1,000 days as Ring of Honor Women's World Champion, but who gives a shit? Like, so what? She's already the longest reigning champion of any kind in the history of the company. It's about time to get her in the mix with these other women that are on the AEW roster. So I figured she would be in the match. Her winning in Texas would have been the ideal, you know, outcome here, and that's what they went with. And the people in the building were very happy to see her pick up the win. And with that win, she now has a guaranteed contract for an AEW Women's World Championship match. Use it wisely, I say. Hopefully it's not a situation where she cashes in, loses, and then just goes right back to doing what she was doing before. They can let her hold on to it and milk it for a little while. Right now, Toni Storm is the champion. By the time she cashes in that contract, though, it's possible we may have a different person with that championship. Maybe Mercedes Moné. We'll see. As far as post-show media scrum notes on the attendance, Tony Khan noted that it was close to 30,000 people in the venue with walk-up. Again, PW Insider said the number was north of 27,000. 27,000, 30,000. It's more than what I thought the final number would be. I had it maxing out maybe around 25. So that's a very healthy number. He said that as far as the women's tag team titles, which he was once again, I feel like he's asked about this every single time they do a media call or a media scrum. Where are all these people coming from that are this enthusiastic about adding women's tag team titles? He said that if there were brackets that he would have come up with weeks ago for women's tag team titles, he would have had to have changed them by now because of injuries. And he specifically named Jamie Hayter as an example of that. He says eventually it is something that he would have an interest in doing. It just didn't sound like anything that was imminent. He said one of the focuses of 2025 that he has is rebuilding the men's tag team division, which I wholeheartedly agree with. That is something that needs to be done. You know, it used to be, honestly, one of the strong points of the television show was their tag team division. They had the best tag team division in the business, and that hasn't been the case for a while now. So if he's talking about refocusing his efforts on really shoring up that division, I'm all for that. You know, they have some good teams now. They have the building blocks there, but to get it back to where it was before is going to take some time, but at least he acknowledges that it's something that he would like to do. And then he was asked about the Casino Gauntlet match winners getting their title matches and how is that going to work, and he indicated that that will be something that they clarify this week on television. You know, whether or not they can cash in any time or if it's going to be on a specific show, I guess we'll find out on Dynamite this week. But that was all in Texas, and I want to turn my attention now to the other big show that took place yesterday, which aired on NBC in prime time, and I did not get to watch until after the show was over, and that was Saturday night's main event. I got to watch the show in 90 minutes with all the commercials stripped out because I didn't watch it live. So when I went back on Peacock to go watch it, it was listed at about an hour 30. I heard that it was just as bad as it was in May when it comes to the NBC ad breaks and all that. But the key news coming out of the show was, of course, Bill Goldberg's retirement. It's what this entire show was built around. His final match against Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship. What's going to happen if he wins the World Heavyweight Championship? Is he not going to retire? Is he going to retire as champion? That was the question coming into this. The other news, though, I said it was a very newsworthy show earlier. The other news was what appears to be a very real, potentially very serious injury to Seth Rollins, one of the biggest stars in the entire company right now that multiple stories are built around. And the other news coming out of the show was the official announcement of a celebrity tag team match at SummerSlam. Now, Jesse Ventura was there, as he is for all these shows. It's in his contract that they have him there for all four Saturday Night's Main Event shows they do each year. But this was the first time where he did not do commentary. He very briefly at the beginning of the show said a few words when they threw it to Joe Tessitore and him. They were like the hosts of the show. And we didn't see him or hear from him again the rest of the night. I wonder if they finally soured on him after the commentary in that cage match between McIntyre and Damian Priest. I hope not. It was one of the most entertaining parts of the entire show. First, we got to go back to SmackDown on Friday night. I was not here for SmackDown again. I was in Texas working the HOG show, so I did not get to see the entirety of SmackDown. But I did go back and watch the Jelly Roll segment. Now, Jelly Roll was advertised for the show because they were in Nashville. He's a Nashville guy, or at least a Tennessee guy. So it was like a homecoming for him, and he was there to perform one of his songs. And then out comes Logan Paul to interrupt. And they go back and forth. Randy Orton intervenes. He comes out on Jelly Roll's behalf. And he's, you know, tearing into Logan on the microphone and really sticking up for Jelly Roll. And then he gets laid out of nowhere by a Claymore kick from Drew McIntyre. Logan then pounces on Randy. Jelly Roll grabs Logan. He has seen enough. And he grabs Logan Paul and he just, it's not really a move that he did. He just threw him down to the mat. And Logan at least did a good job of selling for him, as ridiculous as it honestly looked. Because Logan is, you know, he's a celebrity himself, but Logan's in pretty good shape. Jelly Roll is not in the kind of shape that Logan Paul is in, although Jelly Roll looks a lot smaller than I remember him. Jelly Roll apparently lost over 100 pounds. So he has slimmed down quite a bit and told The Rock he still wants to lose. I think he said like 100 more or something. So apparently he may not be done slimming down. But let me get into what happened here on this show, and then I'll give you my thoughts on the whole thing. But we had a match here between Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre. Randy Orton came out with Jelly Roll in his corner, and Drew McIntyre came out with Logan Paul. And there's just something very, very wrong about just the visual of Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul being on the same side. Drew McIntyre actually wanting Logan Paul by his side. It just, I don't know. Character-wise, it just doesn't seem to be a good fit. But Orton, late in the match, hit the draping DDT. Logan causes a distraction. McIntyre hits Orton with a Claymore. On the outside, Jelly Roll and Logan Paul. What have we done here to wrestling? What am I even talking about here? Jelly Roll and Logan Paul. They engage in a war of words that ended up with Jelly Roll shoving Logan to the ground. This greatly aggravated Drew McIntyre, who starts yelling a Jelly Roll from the ring. But that allows Randy Orton to hit an RKO out of nowhere, and he pins him. After the match, Logan jumps Orton, beats him down in the ring. Jelly Roll has seen enough. And he gets into the ring, and he ends up punching Logan in the face. Gets a big pop, right? Everybody will always pop when Logan Paul gets punched in the face. So he kneels down to check on Randy Orton when out of nowhere, Drew McIntyre hits a Claymore kick to Jelly Roll. And he's unconscious. His hat went flying off his head. And so McIntyre is yelling at him, here come officials, here comes Nick Aldis. And they're really tearing into Drew. What are you doing? And the medics come out and they tend to Jelly Roll. The match itself, a very basic match that was there to set up the match for SummerSlam, which was made official in the back later. Orton and Jelly Roll were being interviewed, and Orton said, oh man, I feel bad about putting you out there in harm's way. And Jelly Roll says he wants revenge. Like, I don't think they're taking me seriously, and he wants revenge. And Orton liked the idea of a tag team match for SummerSlam. And so it is now official. It has the graphic and everything. Randy Orton and Jelly Roll will be a tag team against Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. As far as the angle they did on Friday, I mean, the angle itself was fine. Let me just say this. I don't care about any of this shit. I have, like, there is not a single person on the face of the earth who was sitting around saying, you know what I think is missing from the WWE product right now? You know what I think could really help turn things around here and really, really get my interest? We need Jelly Roll in the ring, okay? He's not one of those celebrities that I think people have dreamt and fantasized about. Oh, man, what would happen if this guy got involved in a wrestling match? You know, how great would that be, right? There isn't a single person on the face of the fucking earth who will sit here and say that. So let me just say that first. Now, I know Jelly Roll is a big fan. He's a legitimate wrestling fan. He's a big fan. I'm sure he's just over the moon that he can be involved here. Apparently, he's been training. I don't know for how long he's been training or who he's training with, but it sounds like he's taking this seriously. And physically, he is a lot smaller than he used to be. You know, he's in better shape and looks like he's taking care of himself better because he was a very heavy man. And that's all well and good. I don't have any interest in seeing this match. At the same time, it is a two-night SummerSlam. They are looking for attractions for that show. It is not the first time that we have obviously had celebrity involvement in wrestling. It is not the first time we have had celebrity involvement in a match, even at SummerSlam. And so it's nothing new, right? I mean, we had something at WrestleMania years ago. I would bet you I felt the same way when they announced the tag team match, right? What was it? Damian Priest and Bad Bunny? Against The Miz and, John Morrison? I'm sure I felt the same way. And Bad Bunny went in there. When he hit that destroyer, I was like, holy shit, right? I mean, it was like, I wasn't expecting that. So who knows? Maybe Jelly Roll will do something in this match that makes me go, wow, I didn't think that he could ever pull off something like that. I'm not going to hold my breath, okay? But I'm not looking forward to this match as if, it's something to really get excited about for the SummerSlam card. I'm not like upset about them doing it. I do. Well, I'll tell you this much. I am upset that this is the best they could come up with for Drew McIntyre for that show. But realistically, all the other key players are accounted for, right? Gunther is not defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre is not even on Monday Night Raw. John Cena and Cody Rhodes, they're going to be wrestling for the WWE Championship. So realistically, McIntyre and Randy Orton both were two guys that just didn't really seem to have a direction for SummerSlam. You could have saved this match and not done it on Saturday night's main event and did it at SummerSlam instead, and I would have had more interest in Randy Orton against Drew McIntyre with more of a proper story built up. But WWE, you know, they're star fuckers. They always have been. They love, especially now under TKO, they love their celebrity involvement. It is as easy as ever now, if you are a celebrity, to go ahead and play professional wrestler. Like, anybody can do it now. They have shown that anybody can get in the ring and do what they do. And for years and years and years, I mean, that is something that they absolutely tried to shy away from. The fact that it would expose the business, you know, if it felt like anybody could just walk in and do what they do. So they kind of limited the celebrity involvement. That's out the window now. I mean, that is just so far gone. So anybody can get involved. And Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre are going to be the anchors of that match, right? They're going to be the anchors for it. Hopefully they'll occupy most of the in-ring time in this match. Logan will be involved too. I don't think Jelly Roll is going to be in there for 15 minutes doing tope con hilos, okay? So they'll work a perfectly sensible match around his limitations, and it may end up being entertaining. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, man, I'm actually really looking forward to this match at SummerSlam, because I would be lying to you if I said that. But I'm also not surprised that they would want to do something like this. This is the same company that gave us Travis Scott coming out during the WrestleMania main event. Now, before the next match, they showed Io Sky in the crowd, Rhea Ripley in the crowd, promoting their Women's World Championship match for Evolution, which is taking place tonight as I am sitting here recording this. When they got to Jade Cargill, she got a big pop as well, and she's posing and smiling for the camera. And then behind her, you see Naomi, who has warned this woman to proceed with caution. Apparently, she didn't really take her advice. And Naomi appears from behind and ambushes her, just tosses her over the barricade. And the fight spills over into the ringside area. Officials come out. Nick Aldis comes out. They get them separated. And they will be on the Evolution card tonight. They're having a no-holds-barred match. And Nick Aldis announces that he has found someone. He was going to tell them in the back, but since they went and kind of jumped the gun here, he'll let them know now that there is a special guest referee for their no-holds-barred match at Evolution. And here she is. And out comes Bianca Belair. Because that worked out so well the last time that she refereed a match. This the same woman who admitted to Adam Pearce, I don't know how to referee. And he basically told her, hey, you'll go out there and wing it. You'll be fine. She was not fine. It did not work out very well. But they're going to trot her out there again as a special referee. If that doesn't scream angle alert here, I don't know what does. Obviously, she's involved for a reason. And I will get to my Evolution predictions here in just a little bit. We had Solo Sikoa with his MFTs, My Family Tree, at his side against Jimmy Uso for the United States Championship. This was a late addition to the show, which only had three matches coming into this weekend. Uso went for a spear. Solo caught him and set him up for a Samoan spike. Jimmy dodged it and hit a couple of super kicks. He went up top. Solo rolled out of the ring. Uso hit a moonsault onto Sikoa and the MFTs. Tala Tonga tried to get involved. Jimmy kicked him in the face. That led to Solo rolling him up for the win to retain the title. Very basic match. That was really the story of this entire show, to be honest with you. After it was over, the MFTs, they started a beatdown on Jimmy Uso. They were holding him while Solo hit him with a Samoan spike. After he spiked him, out comes Jacob Fatu. And he's picking off the MFTs one by one. Tala Tonga now climbs over the top rope. He's got that, that Kevin Nash step over the top rope, the Andre step over the top rope, whatever you want to call it. And he's staring Fatu down, and Fatu doesn't back down. He goes on the attack. He low bridges Tolatonga out of the ring and then does a dive out onto him. And that was the end of that. Jacob Fatu was super over, as you would expect. I don't really have a whole lot else to say about this. Again, this was added at the very last minute. I didn't find it to be overly exciting. It was a perfectly solid match, but I mean, nothing terribly interesting. And then we had LA Knight against Seth Rollins. And they were having a nice match until disaster struck. Rollins delivered a buckle bomb in the corner. Knight is down. And so Rollins goes out to the apron. And he delivers a springboard senton. And it looked like he may have tweaked his knee there on the landing on that senton. I'm not entirely sure, but the spot was springboard senton off the ropes on one side into the ring, and then immediately into a lion salt off the ropes on the other side of the ring. And it was on that moonsault that Rollins appeared to jam his knee. He immediately grabbed the knee. He went down. He moved himself to the corner for a discussion with referee Jessica Carr and Paul Heyman. Go back and take a look at the expression on Paul Heyman's face outside before Rollins jammed his knee. And then immediately after, I mean, you talk about just looking stoic. So then Dr. Amon, who CM Punk is very familiar with, Dr. Amon got into the ring to go check out what was going on with Seth. It didn't look like anything out of the ordinary. I mean, not like when Zoe Starr got her knee bent, or, you know, when if you see someone land at like a grotesque angle on their ankle or anything like that. It was nothing like that. But he was instantly hurt. And Michael Cole on commentary made mention of him tweaking his knee during his match with Penta on Raw Monday night. I don't recall the spot. I have no idea what he was talking about. I don't remember. But I guess it was mentioned on commentary during that match. I don't even know if it was the same knee. But regardless, it was very clear that the man was hurt. And he wasn't angry or anything. He wasn't banging on the mat like he realized, shit, I'm out for a year. Like, it was nothing like that. He looked kind of panicked, and he was talking to them, trying to stay calm, and I don't know what was being said. The referee then walked over to go say something to LA Knight, probably to tell him, we're going home, BFT, and end this thing. Because as Rollins finally pulled himself back up to his feet, and he was sitting there for a good minute and a half, he pulls himself back up to his feet, Knight grabs him, instantly drops him with a BFT, and then pins him 1-2-3. And LA Knight did not look happy as he was leaving the ring that, I guess he had to take the cheap win like that. He should be happy that he won it all, because I can almost guarantee you he was not winning that match until Seth got hurt. The fact that he won it in the way that he did, I think, should dispel any talk of this being anything other than a legitimate injury, because otherwise, it never would have gone down that way. It just never would have happened the way that it did. And this has not been a great week for Seth Rollins. I mean, he had a great match with Penta on Monday night, but then TMZ had that story on Tuesday that a beach house belonging to him and Becky Lynch was burglarized on Tuesday morning. Well, obviously, they were out on the road. They were not there. So their home got broken into and some things got stolen. That was in the news. And then this happens. Now, Rollins had to be helped to the back. Now, at that point, he was very upset. He was cussing and yelling, fuck, fuck, over and over again as he was being helped out, none of which was shown on TV. That was filmed by somebody in the front row. As soon as the match was over, they cut away from the ring. We didn't see them show Rollins again. PW Insider and Fightful, among others, are adamant that they were told the injury is legit. I believe WrestleVotes said the same thing. It is not a work. And I mean, look, if it was a well-kept secret, that's exactly what you would want to tell people, right? And then he pops up at SummerSlam for the surprise cash-in. But no, the way this all went down and the injury clearly threw off the timing for the rest of the show. Apparently Rollins was supposed to go over here and not LA Knight. There's just absolutely nothing that would lead me to believe that this is anything other than a very real, very unfortunate injury. And the timing for Seth Rollins and for WWE could not be any worse. If it's a real injury and it's serious, the timing is just a complete disaster. So, I mean, first you had Kevin Owens, who had that incredible match with Cody at the Royal Rumble, that incredible match with Sami Zayn at Elimination Chamber. He was going to have a match with Randy Orton at WrestleMania, and the neck issue comes up, and Owens is out indefinitely, right? Then Liv Morgan gets hurt, and apparently that caused them to have to scramble and change plans for Evolution tonight. And Liv Morgan is out. She has surgery. She's probably gone for 6 months. Now, potentially, Seth Rollins heading into SummerSlam, their second biggest show of the year, is potentially going to be out of the mix. Now, we'll see if we get an update. We'll have to get some kind of update or like a speech on Raw tomorrow night if it is bad, if he is going to be gone. If he's hurt badly, it's going to have a dramatic effect on creative plans for months to come. Honestly, into WrestleMania next year in Vegas, because Seth was at he was the epicenter of all of it, right? Paul Heyman betrayed Roman Reigns and CM Punk at WrestleMania to align with Seth Rollins. He's got the Money in the Bank briefcase. He's Mr. Money in the Bank. He's leading this brand new faction. He's had issues not only with LA Knight and Jey Uso recently, Gunther, who he just confronted the other week, but also Sami Zayn and CM Punk and Roman Reigns, who is supposed to be back soon for SummerSlam, by the way. How does a Rollins injury, if it's serious, affect the plans for Roman Reigns now? I mean, do they even bother bringing him back? I know he'll be filming his role soon for the Street Fighter movie next month. It's just, if Rollins needs surgery, it is a total disaster. And that's to say nothing of the other issue, which is the issue of the briefcase. What do you do with the Money in the Bank briefcase? Now, if he is seriously hurt, depending on how long he's expected to be out for, remember, he does have up to a year to cash in, right? They could just keep the briefcase on him and let the cash in 6 months from now or 9 months from now be a huge surprise, right? Hopefully it doesn't leak. He's healed up. He's ready to come back. And when you least expect it, bam, Seth Rollins cashes in his Money in the Bank. They could do that. They could have him gift it to Bron Breakker, which would be dumb because why would Bronson Reed be okay with that? And I also just think it's lame because it wouldn't be earned. It's just like, here, I can't use this so you can have it, right? That's stupid. The other option is to have him surrender it with the idea that they're doing a two-night SummerSlam in a few weeks. They could use another attraction on the show, not just Jelly Roll. They could use another attraction for one of those two nights on the show. Why not hang that thing back up and run back another Money in the Bank ladder match, right? You could put Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed in it, you know, with four or five other guys and let somebody else earn it. Now, again, he's got a year. So for him to willingly give it up would seem unfair unless he tried to gift it to one of his guys. Adam Pearce steps in and says, no, you can't do that, but I'll tell you what I'll do. And that's how they could announce another ladder match, but he promises to include Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed in there, right? Everybody else has to qualify, but your guys are in. And in Seth's mind, it's like, oh, fair enough. With both of you guys in there, we've got this thing in the bag. One of you is for sure going to bring that briefcase home. So maybe they work it like that. So there are workarounds to this. I just think back to when Mr. Kennedy got hurt and they were so quick to take that briefcase off of him, and they had Edge beat him on Raw that Monday. And then it turned out it wasn't as serious as they thought. Like, he didn't need surgery. I think it was like a bruised muscle or something like that. He was back in a few weeks. It's like you didn't have to rush the briefcase off this guy. So don't make any rash decisions because the guy has a year to cash in. But we do have this big SummerSlam show coming up. And if Rollins can't go, and he was going to have, I'm sure, a big role on that show, you've got to come up with something else. That's what made me think of doing another Money in the Bank match. But if you work it in that way, you can get Reed and Breakker in there. They don't even have to win it. You could have somebody come out of left field and win it. But that would at least make sense if they just felt like Rollins may not even be back in a year. It really all depends on how serious the injury is. It sucks because he tore his ACL once before. He's had knee issues in the past. I hope it's nothing serious. We'll find out soon enough, I'm sure, in the next 24 to 48 hours. Even before we get to Raw tomorrow night, I'm sure we'll get some more information that comes out about this. But it did not look good. Then we had the main event. Gunther defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Bill Goldberg in Goldberg's final match. They showed highlights throughout the night of Goldberg's career. The champion entered first because this wasn't about the champion. This was really about Goldberg. It was Goldberg's night. That's what the show was sold on. And they did the traditional Goldberg entrance where they had somebody banging on the door, and the somebody was Doug Dillinger. If you watch WCW back in the day, even if you don't recognize the name, I guarantee you know who Doug Dillinger is. He was the head of security for WCW for many, many years, and they dug him up from somewhere. I don't know where he's been, but there he was. He honestly didn't look all that different from the way he looked 30 years ago. And as he used to do back in the day, he bangs on Goldberg's door. Goldberg opens the door, and he's got this whole like posse around him in the hallway. And he came to the ring alone, but he walked down the hall flanked by his son Gage. Diamond Dallas Page was there. They were in Atlanta. I think, I don't know exactly where Page lives. I know his DDPY Performance Center is in Smyrna. So, you know, he's a Georgia guy. DDP was there. Ernest the Cat Miller was there. I don't know when the last time was I saw him. Josh Barnett was there. Doug Dillinger obviously was there. Chuck Zito was there for some reason. I'm like, holy shit, is that Chuck Zito? So Goldberg came out by himself. He was not walking well with that bad knee. That was very noticeable to me as I was watching him walk. He's got, you know, Tanahashi has the Tanahashi knees. Looked like Goldberg had one of Tanahashi's knees. Lillian Garcia, who they brought in to do the ring announcing this weekend for Evolution, also handled the ring announcing duties for this show. They dropped the old school Madison Square Garden style microphone from the ceiling, and they did the usual title match intros. And Goldberg got a great reaction, especially since they billed him from Atlanta. The two of them locked up. Goldberg shoved Gunther to the mat, which surprised Gunther, who put a boot in Goldberg's stomach and bounced off the ropes for a shoulder tackle. Goldberg no-sold it. And Gunther started chopping him, and again, Goldberg just smiled. And he sent Gunther into the corner, and he started kicking and punching him and whipped him out and clotheslined him. And before long, though, Goldberg started favoring the knee, which he had a giant brace on. And they incorporated that into the story of the match, which I think was smart. Michael Cole did that earlier. He brought up the fact that Goldberg's been making the media rounds and doing all kinds of publicity for this show. And he's been very open talking about his body and his bad knee and his bad shoulder. But he's going to give it his all, right? So they incorporated that into the story of the match. So Gunther went up top. Goldberg went over and grabbed him. They did the Ric Flair spot where he tossed him off the top rope into the ring. And then he crouched for the spear. And Gunther senses this, and he rolls out of the ring. Goldberg follows him outside. He goes for a spear outside. Gunther sidesteps, and Goldberg goes crashing through the timekeeper's barricade. And they go to commercial. Gunther was working the knee when they came back. Goldberg threw a flurry of punches to break the hold. They start trading chops until Goldberg's knee gives out. He falls down. And Gunther starts talking shit. And he's pie-facing him, and this led to Goldberg hitting a huge spinebuster out of nowhere. Gunther went to go powerbomb him. Goldberg back body dropped out of it to set up the spear. But when Gunther moved, Goldberg speared Charles Robinson instead. Poor little Nate. First John Cena murders him at Night of Champions, and now this. You know, Robinson was the referee for Goldberg's win over Hogan at the Georgia Dome, right there in Atlanta. So it was pretty cool that he was the referee for his retirement match, at least until he got wrecked by that spear. Then it wasn't so cool. So Gunther takes advantage. He wraps Goldberg's leg around the ropes. He starts pulling at the brace, and he pulls the brace off his knee. And he starts hitting the knee with the brace. Goldberg staggers to his feet. Gunther hits him in the head with the brace. Then he goes outside. Actually, I think the brace fell out of the ring, so he went out to go get it. But he's outside the ring, and he looks over and he notices Goldberg's son in the front row, and he's got a smirk on his face. He saunters over there, he starts jawing at him, and he gave Gage a shove, and Gage hops the barricade. Security pulls him back. Gunther climbs back up onto the apron, and he's got his back turned. This was all done as a diversion to give Goldberg a chance to recover and get in prime position for the spear. And Gunther has no idea what's about to happen here. He gets back in the ring, and Goldberg hits the spear. And after that, you know what usually follows. He sets up for one last jackhammer. And I clasped my hands together and said, please protect Gunther. Please, Lord, protect Gunther on this move. And I held my breath. But he got him up for it. He even held him there for a second or two, and he dropped him just fine. So it all worked out. But there was no referee. So now a new referee, Sean Bennett, hits the ring, but by then Gunther had recovered enough to kick out at two. Gunther locks in the sleeper hold. Goldberg refuses to tap out. They gave him some hope spots here, but in the end, he couldn't power his way out of it, and the referee called for the stoppage as Goldberg went out, ending a 28-year career. This match, believe it or not, went 14 minutes. In his last match, Goldberg wrestled his longest match, his longest singles match, since Unforgiven 2003 against Triple H when he won the World Heavyweight Championship. You'd have to go back that far. We're talking over 20 years to find a singles match this man has been in that went as long as this one did. That is insane. And Gunther carried it. I mean, you could literally see him calling spots throughout the match. But to his credit, Goldberg hung in there with him. He did what he needed to do. You know, he looked tired, but it wasn't like he was gasping for air or anything, like he was about to fucking die in the middle of the ring. And he did what he had to do. He did the spear. He did the jackhammer. This did not need to go that long. But what I'm thinking is that with Seth's match being cut short, obviously that would have gone on for several more minutes. They stretched this match here a little bit more than they otherwise were probably planning to. And it all worked out okay in the end. But as far as like, why the hell would they put Goldberg in a 15-minute match? That has to be why. Because the match that came before went short. And you could only stretch in between both matches for so long. So I wouldn't be shocked if we find out that, you know, they had some time added to their match here in the main event. As far as the match itself and Goldberg's performance, you know what? This could have gone very badly. This could have been a horrible performance for Goldberg. And on some level, I would have felt bad for the guy just because I know why he was so adamant about wanting this retirement match. He was not happy about the match with Roman Reigns 3 years ago. He had COVID. He wasn't ready for it. He found out on 2 weeks' notice. And it just wasn't a very good match. So he didn't want that to be his last match. He didn't want that to be the lasting vision that people had of him. So it was important for him to go out there and not embarrass himself. He did not go out there and embarrass himself. He was better than I was expecting him to be. He wasn't. I'm not saying he was out there, you know, like fucking Kenny Omega or fucking Lou Fez or anything like that. He was Goldberg, as Goldberg as he could be at the age of 58 with the injuries that he has. He did all of the spots that you would expect him to do. He looked fine. I mean, he didn't, you know, botch anything or stumble over himself or fall out of the ring or, you know, anything like that. This match was better, frankly, than it had any right to be. And I'll give Goldberg some credit for that, but also give a huge heaping credit to Gunther because he played his role perfectly. Again, you could tell just watching him, he was calling the spots each time as they went along. And they put together what I thought was a perfectly solid main event. It was not a bad match. It was not a great match. It was a perfectly solid match. And frankly, I think also a fitting send-off for Goldberg. I'm sure he was pleased with the match. He should be pleased with the match. I don't think it could have gone any better than it did. When the match was over, they went to one more commercial break. They come back. Goldberg is in the ring. He is surrounded by friends and family. And Michael Cole is there and asks him a question. Now, this is his big speech, right? Because this is his big finale. And he thanks them all. He said that he loved the fans and thanked them. And they went off the air. Right as he was about to get going in the middle of his retirement speech, and he was really going to get into the meat and potatoes of it, they go off the air. Now, first of all, the impact of the finish of the match, right, the finish of what was supposed to be this big retirement match, was completely negated by them immediately going to commercial break right after the match ended. Then they come back from commercial. They give Goldberg all of 30 seconds to speak before cutting away. And I can't even, it's not even appropriate to say they gave him 30 seconds. What happened was, it's network television. They have a hard out at 10 p.m. In some markets, they even have the news, the 10 o'clock news, right? They're not, this is not like a fucking basketball game where when the game's over, the news begins. Like, no, it's an entertainment show and they have a hard end at 10 o'clock and that's just the way it is, whether they like it or not. But it's just funny to me that the one time in 28 years, Goldberg actually has something to say and he gets cut off. I have no idea why they couldn't continue this on the Peacock feed of the show. They have since posted the full 10-minute segment up on their YouTube channel, finally. They did that a few hours ago. And again, it was a very nice speech where he was just very thankful and appreciative and talked about treating others the way that you would want to be treated and showing respect to other human beings. And he was very happy that all of his friends and family could be there with him. Cody Rhodes came out. He got in the ring. He said some words as well about Goldberg. So it was a very nice thing. It's too bad it couldn't air on TV, but I was waiting for the full thing to be posted on YouTube. And if you have not seen it, that is where you can go find it. I know things went haywire with the Rollins injury. It threw the timing for the rest of the show. The next 30 or 40 minutes, it completely threw the timing of the show off. And you really couldn't predict that something like that would happen. But I'm watching this and him get cut off after 30 seconds of speaking. The man just wrestled his final match. And I'm like, they're really going to put John Cena's retirement in December on Saturday night's main event? I mean, it's not confirmed that it'll be on Saturday night's main event, but the belief is that that's exactly where it's going to be airing. And I just think that's fucking terrible. I said this at the beginning of the year, even before he started the retirement tour. You can get an entire special on Netflix or Peacock devoted entirely to John Cena's final match. You could build an entire show around it as a streaming special. They put that thing on Saturday night's main event. It is going to be butchered. So I hope it doesn't happen on that show. I really, really hope it doesn't go down on that show. But here you had Gunther beating Goldberg. It was the only outcome to this match. Anything other than Gunther beating Goldberg would have been fucking dumb. Could they have done a Money in the Bank cash in? Sure. But I would not have had Goldberg win first and then have Seth Rollins cash in. And by the way, for people thinking, well, Rollins was probably going to cash in, but they called an audible because he got hurt. Apparently, the plan was not for him to cash in his Money in the Bank. He was supposed to beat LA Knight, but the plan was not for him to cash in last night. So I think that's from PW Insider. But yeah, I mean, anything other than Gunther winning would have been just a fucking gigantic mistake. So they went with the right outcome here. Gunther has now retired Goldberg. Now imagine him retiring John Cena, too, at the end of the year. Imagine being able to put those two things on your resume. I retired Goldberg and John Cena in the same year. Because when we make the list of potential final opponents for John Cena, Gunther has to be on that list. I don't know who it's going to be. They've already done the CM Punk match. They've already done the Randy Orton match. I don't see it being AJ Styles. It's not going to be like Styles or Sheamus. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be Kevin Owens or any of those people that he's been in the ring with before. Gunther is, it may not be Seth Rollins now either. Gunther is probably the name that I would have at the top of my list as the likeliest final opponent for John Cena. I mean, who else would really be in serious consideration for it? You know, I mean, would they do a Bron Breakker and have him wrestle one of the new guys with the idea that, you know, he puts them over at the end? I mean, they already did that at WrestleMania with Austin Theory a few years ago. That didn't really work out too well. But I mean, I suppose you could do that. You've got Drew McIntyre. Maybe he's an option. But Gunther is probably, in my mind, the likeliest choice. So he may well end this year having retired both of these men. I think that's a very real possibility. And real quick, NXT had the Great American Bash yesterday. I did see one match. I did not see most of the show, but people were raving about the Ethan Page, Ricky Saints, False Count Anywhere match. And so I watched it, and it was very good. That Ego's Edge off the stage through the table was a crazy spot, and that was a good way to end it. But again, I just haven't had time to watch the rest of the show yet, which is what happens when you counter-program Sometimes your shit is going to go on the back burner and just have to wait for another day. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor. I don't know how it's been where you are, but summer's been a scorcher so far here in New York. Thankfully, we made it past that last heat wave, and I've been trying to take the time to get out and enjoy it, which is why the last thing I want to be doing is spending hours in my kitchen cooking dinner every single night. That's where Factor comes in. Factor meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes, and the whole thing could not be easier. Factor meals arrive fresh and ready to eat, making them perfect for any active lifestyle, not just this summer, but all year round. With 45 weekly menu options, you can pick gourmet meals that fit your goals. Choose from options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and more. Factor powers your day with nutritious breakfasts, on-the-go lunches, premium dinners, and my favorite, guilt-free snacks and desserts. That's your entire day taken care of right there. You don't even have to think about it. So enjoy more this summer. If you want all the flavor without all the fuss, Factor's got you covered. One of my favorite Factor meals was just in the last few months. I mean, I've enjoyed them all. I'm the one picking them from the menu, obviously. I'm going to pick what I like, and there's plenty to choose from. But my favorite by far was the sesame teriyaki filet mignon. If I spend 2 minutes trying to make anything and it comes out as good as this did, I'm definitely sticking with it. Plus, I like that I can eat healthier and at the same time actually enjoy what I'm eating, and I don't have to feel guilty after I'm done. And also, you know, with my streaming schedule lately, in all honesty, I just can't afford to be tied down during the week to spending any length of time making dinner. You know, on the weekend, sure, maybe, but weeknights are tough for me. So I appreciate how convenient Factor makes everything. Just heat it up in 2 minutes and it's ready to go. Factor takes care of the hard part. Let them take care of it for you too with this exclusive offer for Solomonster Sounds Off listeners. Get started at factormeals.com/solomonster50off and use code solomonster50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code SOLOMONSTER50OFF at factormeals.com/SOLOMONSTER50OFF for 50% off plus free shipping. factormeals.com/SOLOMONSTER50OFF. Now, Evolution 2 is tonight with a 7 o'clock Eastern start time, so I better wrap this up real quick because this show is only a few hours away here. I did my predictions on the podcast last week. There have been some minor changes to the show. Instead of six, now we have 7 matches announced, so they have a full card, including a battle royal, with the winner receiving a championship match at Clash in Paris. Stephanie Vaquer is in there. Nikki Bella is in there. They put a graphic up during the show last night with, I think, pretty much all the names that are expected, so I don't know that there are going to be any real surprises in there beyond that. Maybe. I mean, we'll find out, but I'm still sticking with Stephanie to win, and then she goes to Clash in Paris at the end of August to challenge for the Women's World Championship. Jade Cargill against Naomi, no holds barred. I asked the question last week, do we see Bianca Belair getting involved here in some way? The answer is yes. Yes, she will. She will now be the special guest referee, even though, again, by her own admission previously, she says she had no idea how to referee a match. Didn't work out too well last time when she was in the ring with Rhea and Io. I am changing my prediction here. I originally was going with Jade. In light of this new development, I am going with Naomi for the win. I don't think there's any sort of outright turn by Bianca in this match, but I do think things will go down in such a way that ends up with Naomi winning the match. We have a 4-way match for the women's tag team titles. Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez representing the Judgment Day defend those titles against Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss, Asuka and Kairi Sane, and Sol Ruka and Zarya representing NXT. I am sticking with the Judgment Day to retain those titles. I don't think Charlotte and Alexa are getting them just yet. Maybe it's SummerSlam, but I don't think it's going to happen here. JC Jane will defend the NXT Women's Championship against the winner of the Evolution Eliminator Tournament, Jordynne Grace. Last night at the Great American Bash, there was a tag team match in the main event. It was Jordynne Grace and Mariah May, now Blake Monroe, teaming up to take on the members of Fatal Influence. Grace dealt the knockout blow to the champion, but it was Blake picking up the win for her team. which means that she just pinned the NXT Women's Champion. Now, there's every reason to think that Jordynne Grace is going to win that title tonight, and then Blake Monroe is going to attack her. Maybe not tonight, but soon enough, and turn heel to set up a match between them, because there's already talk of her being turned heel anyway. Plus, the added wrinkle is that the winner of this match tonight, whoever comes out as the champion, is going to be wrestling Masha Slamovich, who got involved in that match. She made a cameo, actually, to kind of provide the assist to the babyfaces. There's going to be a winner-take-all champion versus champion match at TNA Slammiversary next Sunday. So whoever walks out of this match as the champion is wrestling Masha. Jordynne Grace makes for a more interesting challenger than JC Jane does. So I know that I probably should be going with Jordynne Grace to win the title here, but I'm not convinced. I'm sticking with my original pick. I'm sticking with JC Jane to retain. We have a triple threat match for the Women's Intercontinental Championship. Becky Lynch defending against Bayley and Lyra Valkyria. I'm trying to figure out, like, what is the end game for SummerSlam coming out of this? If we're already getting the triple threat match here, what do these women do? What does Becky do at SummerSlam? And I'm not quite sure yet, but I don't see her losing the championship here. She is going to retain. Tiffany Stratton defends the Women's Championship from SmackDown against the Hall of Famer Trish Stratus, who in her own media rounds this week in promoting the show in a with a laugh, nothing malicious or anything, but she basically said the same thing that I and a lot of other people have been saying, which is, yes, this was very rushed together, and it would have been better to have more time to really promote a story here, but it is what it is. Trish ain't wrong when she says that. I think the potential is here for this to be actually very good. If you look at the quality of the last match Trish had one-on-one against somebody, which was against Becky 2 years ago in the cage at Payback. I mean, she had a tag team match earlier this year at Elimination Chamber with Tiffany that I don't honestly remember a thing about. It left no impression on me whatsoever. But that cage match 2 years ago, that did leave an impression because that was a very good match. I would even argue the best match that Trish Stratus has ever had. Can she follow that up with something comparable? We'll find out. I mean, Tiffany Stratton doesn't have the sort of experience that Becky Lynch does. So that'll be a little bit different. She's not in there, Trish, with somebody with the level of experience, certainly that she has, let alone Becky. But Tiffany can be very good. It just depends on who she's in the ring with. Trish ain't full-time anymore. She wrestles very seldomly. So I don't know what to expect, but there is the potential for this to be very good. I just have no idea if that's the version of the match that we're going to get. I think it'll end up being okay. I think it'll be good. But she has absolutely no chance of winning the championship. Tiffany is retaining. And in the main event, Io Sky defends her Women's World Championship against Rhea Ripley. The same Io Sky who already has 2 wins over Rhea this year. One on Raw where she won the title and then the triple threat match at WrestleMania. I think they're going to want that belt back around Rhea's waist for SummerSlam, which is coming up quick. So the only question is, do they want Rhea to go into Perth in October as the champion for Crown Jewel, or do they want her going in as the challenger? That really is the only question I don't yet know the answer to, but I know that belt is coming back soon to Rhea Ripley. So soon, in fact, I think it happens tonight. I'm predicting a new champion in the main event. I think that we are unlikely to get a title change with Tiffany or JC Jane, and we get one here instead to close out the show. So join me when it's over, because I'll be live on the YouTube channel for the full review tonight after Evolution. And one last news item here, and this concerns TNA from a story on the website johnwallstreet.com. TNA president Carlos Silva was interviewed by johnwallstreet.com and noted the company is being represented by CAA in media rights discussions and is seeking $10 million a year for a media rights deal. Silva also noted the company's hope to go live weekly with Impact if and when they acquire the media rights deal, but also stated the brand is not yet profitable and that a sale is not out of the realm of possibility. Is sure to get people talking because there are already people who think it's, you know, the fix is in as far as WWE buying TNA. It's only a matter of when and not if. says a new media rights deal will help us. This is from Carlos Silva. Now, a new media rights deal will help us build a more consistent fan base with larger reach. It will also provide us the opportunity to go live 52 weeks a year. And in today's world, live matters. The company is confident that it will have a new distribution deal in place within the next 60 days. According to Silva, we are talking to all of the established linear guys and a couple of newer platforms that need a foundational programming centerpiece. There are a couple of networks that look like Spike TV, in today's world, that we could be a good fit for, the same way UFC and TNA were for that network a decade or two ago. Silva praised the attention the NXT relationship has garnered TNA and noted that when they go live, TNA hits the 100,000 audience range. Anthem leadership believed the show, and subsequently the promotion, would benefit dramatically from having proper lead-ins and lead-outs to its broadcasts. That's the name of the game in programming, Silva said. A weekly number between 250,000 and 500,000 in terms of Nielsen-esque P2 plus households is perfectly realistic on a network that is a good fit in 40 or 50 million homes. Access TV is in about 30 million homes. 500,000 viewers would be in the rough ballpark of what AEW's Dynamite show draws on TBS in its least viewed weeks. Figures do not include viewers watching on HBO Max. But that does not mean TNA is seeking a deal on par with what Tony Khan's promotion got from Warner Brothers Discovery. Silva did not shoot down the idea of selling off their sports division if they cannot make the brand profitable. He says either we keep the portfolio and continue to grow it, or there could be a spinoff of the Anthem Sports division. That division includes TNA as well as Invicta and the Fight Network. The article notes TNA is not yet profitable, but the business is said to be moving in the right direction. Anthem turned down an attempt by Scott D'Amore to purchase the company when he was dismissed from his position as TNA president several years ago. Several years ago? Wasn't that earlier this year? Or was it last year? I think it was last year. The JohnWallStreet.com article noted that there has been speculation that WWE parent company TKO could end up acquiring TNA. TNA and NXT, of course, are currently in the first year of an announced three-year partnership. Now, Silva has since appeared on the Ariel Helwani show. That was on Wednesday. And he was asked if there was a timeline for finalizing a new agreement. He says, "We've been working on it since the beginning of the year, really since I joined. And it really has accelerated over the last 60 days. I think we could be in a 60 or 90 day window to get something done. As you know, the media landscape is changing every single day, and literally week to week things are changing. It's never done until the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, but we're working hard on it." Silva also expanded on his comments from Tuesday's interview about going live each week. He mentioned that they experimented recently with airing a live episode of Impact on TNA Plus before it aired on Access TV the following Thursday. He also mentioned that they have been asked about going live each week by potential broadcast partners. "We've been asked by many partners that they would like it to be live 52 weeks a year. And so we're talking through how we would do that. Maybe it wouldn't go live in January straight away, 52 weeks, but we would certainly lean into that and try to make that happen now." He later clarified that this would not necessarily mean they would be in a new location each week and on the road all year. Look, the potential benefits of this relationship with WWE, I think you're starting to see what they are now. And I think WWE is probably willing to do what they can to help out TNA to the extent that they could help get them some sort of media rights deal, because it is something that will probably, in their view, weaken or potentially take away from AEW, right? AEW is the only promotion that WWE is bothering to counter-program. They just announced another NXT show, by the way, Heat Wave, for the same day as Forbidden Door. I think it's 6:30, I think, is when the show is scheduled for, 6:30 or 7. This is going to continue. And this is what happens when, you know, you have competition. And they're going to continue to counter-program, but AEW is the only promotion that they bother doing that with. They don't do that with anybody else. So when they do things, I think they do it in mind with trying to weaken or hurt what they view as their true competition. So anything that they do, I think you kind of need to look at it through that lens. if they could help TNA even gobble up some international media rights deals in certain markets that maybe AEW has or has coming up for expiration, like, you don't think that WWE and TKO wouldn't help out? So you take that with the exposure that they have provided TNA talent by having them appear on, you know, NXT, I guess, is on the CW now, but providing them that sort of visibility on television that they would not be getting if they just aired on Access TV. Like, of course, that's going to help out TNA. And I'm not surprised when I hear about some of their live events, you know, selling better than they have in quite some time, selling more tickets. This is what you would expect to come out of a relationship like this. Now, WWE is not being reciprocal as far as sending big name talent from the main roster, you know, over to work TNA shows. They could have certainly used that help next weekend for Slammiversary. I don't see them doing that. But look, I mean, $10 million a year, God bless them if they can get it. I don't know, for the audience they have right now, $10 million a year media rights deal to me sounds very ambitious. But they're supposedly, you know, in the closing days here of whatever this window is of negotiations that they're having, talking to different partners. So we probably won't have to wait very long to find out where they land, as long as they land somewhere that has decent visibility. All the times I've brought this up before, I always come back to this point. TNA is never going to truly grow beyond where they are now unless they get better television. It's just not going to happen. So they have to get on a network other than Access TV. I understand Anthem owns Access, and so for them it's very easy to just make Impact the sort of crown jewel of that network and program it on that network. It has to get on a channel other than Access TV. And if they can do that, then I think they could really start to grow their audience even more than, you know, they have by virtue of this relationship. Slammiversary is next Sunday. Real quick, this is the card. They are emanating from the UBS Arena on Long Island. And this is the card. Indy Hartwell is going to be going one-on-one with Tessa Blanchard. I figure Tessa probably wins that one. Cedric Alexander against Mustafa Ali. I have Ali for the win. We have the Inspiration Challenge, which is the former Iconics, challenging the Elegance Brand. It's Dana Brooks' group. For the TNA Knockouts Tag Team titles, I think the Inspiration win those titles. Four-way Tag Team Ladder Match for the TNA World Tag Team Championship. The Nemeth Brothers defend against the Hardys, the Rascals, and First Class, which is Casey Navarro and AJ Francis. I think the Nemeths retain here. X Division Championship Moose defends against Leon Slater, who is a bit smaller than Moose. I'm going with the underdog here. I'm going with Leon Slater to win that title. And then it'll be winner take all, TNA Knockouts champion Masha Slamovich against the NXT Women's Champion, either JC Jane or Jordan Grace. We'll find out in a few hours who that is. If you're brave enough to bet on the TNA person winning a WWE championship, in this case, the NXT Women's Championship, you're a better person than I am, because I'm going with whoever the NXT Women's Champion is to win that match. And then in the main event, Trick Williams. And this is part of the reason why, honestly, because Trick Williams is the reigning TNA World Heavyweight Champion. He is, of course, from NXT. He is defending that title at a triple threat match against Joe Hendry and Mike Santana. This is a homecoming for Mike Santana, being a New York guy. I certainly do not see the TNA Knockouts champion winning her match. And then also having the guy representing NXT dropping his championship in the main event. I don't see those two things happening on the same show. And I do think Trick Williams is losing. I think Mike Santana should win. Could they hold off on his title win? They could. But I just feel like him winning the title in New York is just such a layup. So I'm going with Mike Santana to win the championship. I did have some questions in the mailbag, but we'll save those for next week. Keep sending in those questions because we'll add to it. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. I'll save what I have here for next week's show. That's next Sunday. That'll be episode 921 of The Solomonster Sounds Off. Of course, you will find me live on YouTube tonight after Evolution for the full recap. Back on YouTube tomorrow night live for the Raw post show. I'll be live with JD over on his channel for episode 103, I believe, of Tuesday Night Titans. And then, of course, the Dynamite post show on Wednesday. Show after show after show. Banger after banger after banger. It never seems to end. It's been a very busy weekend. At some point, I'll sleep, probably when I'm dead. But at some point, I will try to sleep more than 3 hours. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a great week. Thank you for all the love and support. Everybody who I met in Texas, you guys are awesome. And I will see you tonight in a matter of hours for the Evolution post-show review live on YouTube and back next Sunday for 921. Until then, take care, guys.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Bronson Reed one-on-one against Jey Uso. So Uso got back in the ring and he was looking for another suicide dive. He is stopped in his tracks because Bronson Reed yeeted. You talk about yeeting. He yeeted this fucking chair, this office chair, right at Jey Uso's head. And the referee calls for the bell for what you would assume is a disqualification. They called this a no contest. I would love to know, what do you have to do to get yourself disqualified? If Bronson Reed shot Jey Uso in the face, would it be a no contest? Like, where's the line here? When I saw that on the screen, I said, you gotta be shitting me. This man threw a fucking office chair at this man's head. A no contest?
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007.
Bringing you the good, the bad, and the ugly. Check out the weekly live streams, bonus content for subscribers, and follow The Sala Monster on Facebook, Instagram, and X. The Sala Monster.
I love you so long.